It is 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. We're starting with political news this morning. We're going to take a look at the fate of the National Rifle Association, which for the past several decades has been considered a juggernaut in right-wing politics in the United States. Over the course of this year, seems to be imploding on fronts both financial and political. The organization has been bleeding money. It's been involved in expensive litigation with its principal advertising firm, Ackerman McQueen, which put together NRA TV, which as of last week has been basically shut down, no longer doing live production under orders from the NRA. That litigation has dragged a lot of the organization's dirty laundry out into the public, and that, among other things, has prompted an investigation by New York Attorney General Letitia James, who has control over whether or not NRA gets to remain being a nonprofit under New York State law. We're joined right now by a reporter who's been covering the ins and outs of the slow-moving implosion of one of the foundations of the right-wing gun lobby. Jane Costin's a senior politics reporter at Vox with a focus on the GOP, conservatism, and the far right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where should we start the clock on the current crisis? Is it with the election of Donald Trump?
Somewhat. I think it's important to know that since Trump's election, the NRA has been having some unexpected issues. There have been issues that relate to fundraising. The NRA brought in tens of millions to help get Trump elected, but as tends to happen after a successful election cycle, you know, the urgency wasn't there. And there's been more information now as a result of this lawsuit and the back and forth between Ackerman McQueen and the NRA that shows that a lot of what the NRA has been spending on has perhaps been less than necessary. You know, you're seeing stories, you know, I think that a lot of gun rights advocates have been talking about this for a long time, that this has been a big issue, that, you know, there's a Jeff Knox, who's the son of a late NRA board member Neil Knox, said, at the blog Ammo Land, that continuing to deny encircling the wagons to protect against outside assaults will not save the NRA. So this is a longer problem, but it's really blown up this year as a result of these fights over alleged financial mismanagement and specifically former NRA president Oliver North against Wayne LaPierre, the organization's long-tenured CEO.
So let's start with the accusations that Oliver North leveled. And these were basically that the relationship between NRA and its recently fired advertising firm, Ackerman McQueen, was kind of a way of covering up self-dealing. Basically, NRA would handle oodles of money to the advertising firm. The advertising firm would in turn spend some of that money on NRA employees, like Vice President Wayne LaPierre, who they reportedly bought $275,000 worth of suits for.
Right, exactly. And so it's also interesting because the relationship between these two entities is, it couldn't be more tight. For example, the NRA is paying an attorney named Bill Brewer to fight this, the current lawsuit that's stemming from the state of New York. Bill Brewer's father-in-law is Angus McQueen, the McQueen of Ackerman McQueen. So these two entities, you know, Ackerman McQueen is the entity that came up with the From My Cold Dead Hands line that Charlton Heston used so famously at a early 2000s NRA meeting. You know, they have helped to really shape what the NRA looks like and, more importantly, what it sounds like. But, you know, beginning with a letter released by Oliver North, which basically accuses, you know, Wayne LaPierre of self-dealing, of, you know, and then that he was going to set up a crisis financial problems. Then Wayne LaPierre responded by accusing Oliver North of trying to blackmail him, saying that Oliver North had called, unless LaPierre resigned from the NRA, Oliver North would send a damaging letter to the NRA board alleging sexual harassment and more financial improprieties like excessive staff travel.
Jane Costin, you're starting to break up on us. Is there any way for you to move to an area where you might have a few more bars on your cell phone?
Of course. Hang on just 1 second.
Speaking of Jane Costin, senior politics reporter at Vox, go ahead.
So this back and forth between the two entities has been going on for a while, and it really is evidence of how much of a tight financial and social relationship the NRA has had with its, you know, with the advertising firm that's helped to shape what the NRA looks like.
So, separate from this, the NRA has been involved in this extraordinarily expensive legal defense of something that critics have called murder insurance. It was a program that Ackerman McQueen helped develop after the election of Donald Trump to prop up the organization's finances, an insurance product called CarryGuard. Can you walk us through that?
So CarryGuard was intended to be that, say you used, in your view, you shot someone in what you viewed as self-defense. And so now it is offered, there were three tiers of coverage, including basically to quote The Trace, which is a terrific blog that covers gun issues. They offered pretty much a financial and logistical backstop should you use a gun while claiming self-defense. There is up to $150,000 in criminal defense reimbursement, $1 million in civil liability protection, and then a 24-hour advice hotline and access to money for bail and cleanup costs. And I think this was something, it was meant to replace a similar form of self-defense insurance that used to be offered from the NRA. And now, you know, it's not very typical for covering potential criminal liability for an organization to offer this kind of policy. But I think in some ways this is responding to what some NRA members were asking for, which is, you know, if I shoot someone in self-defense, I am going to need assistance. You know, one, the assumption that you would be doing so, but also the idea that you would need financial assistance in order to do so legally. And so this particular policy, though, for understandable reasons, was responded to with a great deal of dismay from New York State, which is where the NRA is based. And now it's become a bigger issue because I think that that's been something that has resulted in a wide-ranging investigation, as you brought up. And then I think that in multiple states have already banned the program, and in a lawsuit, the NRA said that it's lost tens of millions of dollars from the program because the administrator of CarryGuard said they were complying with state law in states that offered that program, and they weren't. And so I think it's been another effort from the NRA where it started out based on what they were hearing from members about their concerns about self-defense and using guns in self-defense and how to deal with the aftermath. But the rollout, and especially the relationships with the administrator of the program, that has turned out to be more controversial than the NRA could have possibly expected.
So what's all the infighting doing to the overall health of the organization, to its finances, to its membership?
So I think that this back and forth is revealing that the NRA's financial standing isn't what we've been hearing. For example, the NRA frequently brings up, it is the nation's largest gun rights organization. It often brings up specific numbers, as 5 million members, but then a lot of times it's relying on membership numbers that aren't particularly clear to the general public. There have been, some obvious signs of some potential financial trouble. So, for example, the yearly cost of a membership has gone down. It used to be, I think it was $40, and now it's gone down more recently. That can, occasionally be a sign of something. So maybe it's not. But I think it's indicative, especially as now some of the NRA's biggest political leaders, the people like Chris Cox, who are trusted to get the NRA's message not just across in the public, but across in Congress, that now that he has resigned from the organization, I think politically the NRA is in a difficult situation, which I want to remind listeners that the NRA was behind Trump because Trump made it very clear that gun rights issues would not be a problem under his administration. But then it turns out that that wasn't entirely true. You've seen an executive order banning bump stock modifications, which is something that the NRA has had no problem with, even while other gun rights organizations have filed lawsuits against that executive order. You've heard Donald Trump say things like, take the guns first and go through due process second. which, you know, when I spoke to conservatives, they said basically if Obama had said that kind of thing, there would have been rioting in the streets. And so I think that this entire situation has revealed how deeply politicized the NRA has become and how the financial dealings are just as linked to its political issues as, you know, as anything else. It's just simple fundraising problems.
Speaking of Jane Costin, senior politics reporter at Fox, she focuses on the far right in the U.S., and she's been covering, among other things, the implosion of the National Rifle Association, principal gun lobby organization in the United States, which has been going through an increasingly public, well, looks like path towards dissolution. The latest development is that they have fired their principal advertising firm, Ackerman McQueen. They run NRA TV on behalf of the NRA. NRA TV now no longer doing live production of new content. They have also just fired the second in command at the NRA, Christopher W. Cox. What does this mean for the larger political landscape? Like, does it become easier to move the ball down the court on gun regulation with the National Rifle Association in disarray?
I think that as you're starting to hear more Americans voicing support for specific gun control measures, even people who are gun owners, and I think especially as the NRA is losing the very people it trusts to make the political argument for its, you know, for its particular case, and especially, you know, I think for the NRA, when a lot of people think about the NRA, they think about Dana Loesch and NRA TV, and they're not thinking about what the NRA has done with regard to gun safety education. They're thinking, the NRA is the organization that got very upset about an episode of Thomas the Tank Engine. And so I think that the NRA is shifting into a culture war organization and away from what it was, you know, it used to be a sportsman's organization up until the mid-1970s when the NRA made its move from Washington, D.C. to Virginia. And, you know, the efforts at encouraging self-defense have, you're not hearing that as much while the NRA has been so focused on engaging on a very strict cultural platform. And I think that that's meant that other, you know, people are starting to look for other gun rights organizations. You're hearing people say, you know, going to say Gun Owners of America, which is a rival organization, which has been much more willing to get involved in court proceedings and get involved in issues that the NRA will not, because the NRA wants to keep the support of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. But I think that, you know, there's a sense that the NRA, you know, again, the NRA is still the country's largest gun rights organization. But I think its political viability right now is up for debate.
So you're saying actually this might be channeling energy and people to organizations that take an even harder line on gun regulation than the NRA has?
I think that there've been a series of, you know, I'll use an example. So last year, at the beginning of 2017 and 2018, the NRA had a couple of legislative priorities. It wanted to get they wanted to get silencer reform, silencers, which are modification on a gun that can lessen the sound it makes. They wanted to get concealed carry reciprocity passed, so that if you have a concealed carry license in one state, you can take that license anywhere and still have the same concealed carry rights. Each time that they tried to get these issues through Congress, a mass shooting would take place and the legislation would get pulled from the floor. And you saw that specifically happening with silencer reform. So, you know, gun control organization used the example that, you know, the NRA had the wind at their backs and now they're facing a Category 4 hurricane of their own making, because, you know, if their basic legislative priorities, you know, the issues that this is why people donate to the NRA, people are not necessarily just donating because they like to donate money. People want to get specific issues and specific legislation through Congress. You know, when you're hearing from people saying, you know, you can't get this done, or you don't have the power to get it done, or the people that you trusted in Congress who would be able to get this done are pulling legislation because a mass shooting just happened and it wouldn't be, the propriety is gone. I think that that's a concern for the NRA going forward.
Got it. What about the New York Attorney General Letitia James' sudden interest in whether NRA still technically qualifies as a nonprofit? How big a threat is this to the organization's future?
I I think the NRA is viewing that as a big threat because it's not necessarily what the ultimate findings will be, but it'll be about the documentation that will be overturned, that will be given to the New York Attorney General, and especially with, you know, this carry guard and the specific legal issues the organization has had, that's going to be something the New York Attorney General is going to be looking at extremely closely. And I think that the NRA has been using this as a fundraising opportunity in some senses. You're seeing NRA emails saying, like, this could be the end of the NRA, which I think is a bit much. But I also think that there's a sense that this is a big issue just because of what it could reveal. I mean, keep in mind that this back and forth between Ackerman McQueen and the NRA was started in a sense, you know, that didn't require a legal process to find out that Wayne LaPierre, for example, is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on suits or on personal travel. Now think of what could be done with a subpoena.
So what's the evidence that, like, the NRA's base, its membership, the people from whom it derives its political clout, not just because they give money, but because it's able to tell them how to vote, that they're kind of done with an organization that's just put money in Wayne LaPierre's very, very highly tailored suit pockets?
I think that the NRA's base, you know, this, it's challenging because, you know, what the NRA's base is interested in is largely determined in some ways by, you know, what we hear from the NRA itself. But I do think that this, we go back and forth, you know, when you have the president of an organization threatening allegedly to blackmail the CEO of an organization, and they're, you know, supposedly allies who were supposed to be speaking together on the same day at the NRA meetings earlier this year, I think that that's a challenge for members for whom, you know, the vast majority of people are, you know, are spending whatever, $25 to $30 a year to be members of the NRA, more because of what that represents as a signal to others. I think that being a member of the NRA represents, you know, this is where I stand on these particular gun issues. However, it doesn't mean that you're inherently opposed to all forms of gun control. It also means that, you know, you might be opposed to the NRA's stance on, say, bump stock modifications, which the NRA has decided it's not going to fight for anymore, and it's going to, you know, permitted essentially the Trump administration to use an executive order that's been challenged in court, I think, at least twice, in order to ban them and require that people give them back, essentially. So I think that, you know, it's tough to say what, you know, a middle-of-the-road NRA member might be thinking right now, but I do think that there's a sense that the culture war detritus is not necessarily what got people involved. The NRA's internal decision-making has gotten increasingly more difficult to defend.
Now, what about Ackerman McQueen? Like, how big a part of their portfolio was the relationship with NRA?
Well, I think, again, these were a lot of personal relationships between these two entities. You know, there's been some really terrific reporting showing that Ackerman McQueen, for example, created a luxury magazine for high-level members of the NRA, which was read by, you know, at most 1,000, 2,000 people. It still cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to create. So the NRA has been a big part of Ackerman's portfolio, perhaps even the largest part. And so I think that, you know, they're not going to go down in this without a fight. And I think that there could be a lot more details revealed, especially as you're seeing other members of the NRA board, including Alan West, who people might remember from his efforts to run for the House a couple of years ago, saying, you know, it's time for a change in leadership. And all of this is coming out of the documentation that's been made over this, you know, near decades-long relationship between the NRA and Ackerman McQueen.
When this dust-up first started between Oliver North and Wayne LaPierre, it looked like it might be the end for Wayne LaPierre. The information that went public in pretty short order was pretty damning. It made him look pretty corrupt in terms of his relationship with Ackerman McQueen, the money that was going out of the NRA's pockets and back into his through another entity. Do you have any sense of why he's been able to consolidate power and rally the organization around him? Like, what does he have to offer the other people in the organization?
I think that there is a sense, Wayne LaPierre has outlasted a lot of challenges. You know, this is, people have tried to get rid of him. Even in his relationship with Ackerman McQueen, there have been efforts to kind of move him out of the front line of the organization. Every one of these efforts, you know, he survived former President H.W. Bush leaving the organization when LaPierre described FBI agents as jackbooted thugs in the early 1990s. You know, if anything, Wayne LaPierre is a survivor. So at this point, I would say that I think he should be pretty secure in his positionality. But I do think that this, what we're learning about the finances of the NRA and specifically how much the finances of the NRA go to prop up Wayne LaPierre and others at the highest level, while you're hearing from employees at the NRA's offices in Virginia that they've stopped offering free water and coffee, and you're starting to see it, you know, rolling layoffs across the organization, I think that that's cause for concern.
All right. Jane Costin, appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, and apologies for the phone issues.
Jane Costin is a senior politics reporter at Vox. Her focus is on the GOP, that is the Republican Party, on conservatism and on the far right. She, among many other reporters, has been covering the implosion, both political and financial, of the country's premier gun rights lobby organization, the National Rifle Association. The latest news on which is they have now fired their second in command, Christopher W. Cox, reportedly for his role in trying to oust the first in command, Wayne LaPierre, and also severed their relationship with their principal advertising firm, Ackerman McQueen, which is a full-service shop for the NRA. They actually operated NRA TV, which has now ceased live production. That takes us to just before 7:30 in the morning. The program's up front. My name's Brian Edwards-Tiekert. The guest we did have teed up for the next half hour of our program has food poisoning. Yikes. Instead, we're going to bring you a book interview we did trying to get some insight into the types of psyches that wind up in positions like Donald Trump. It is Tyrannical Minds coming up next after the news.